We welcome in our talented friend, Colin Fleming, a wonderful author. Have you read all his books? Have you read some? You should. What is wrong with you? Check out the most recent, If You Brackets, Fabulous Fantasy, Effery Hope, his wonderful book, Scrooge, collection Buried on the Beaches, and so many more. Colin Fleming joins us. Hello there, Mr. Fleming.
Hey, how's it going, Kimball?
Fine, thank you. It's Tuesday, and Colin Fleming weather is but 2 days away up here.
Oh, yeah? Supposed to get cold, huh?
Yeah, low 60s on Thursday. And my first thought was, I love that, but I know how much you enjoy that, too.
I do. It's pretty comfortable when it gets to be like that. It's a lot better than the heat, right? It's nice to run some stairs and some cool autumn weather.
Well, we're going to talk about the stairs and your return to the monument in a little bit. But up first, we're going to talk some baseball. And let's begin with a wonderful episode of the radio serial, the radio version of Gunsmoke, a baseball-themed episode that was, man, it was just a blast. What fun.
A lot of research was done for this, too, right? Don't you think? I mean, I like how you had to crank these shows out once a week. But they're always well-written, they're always well-informed, and so this goes back to the earliest days of baseball, really before we had the rule changes that were going to essentially stick around since the 19th century. So this is sort of before that. It's like a lot of Westerns. Did you ever see the baseball episode of Little House on the Prairie? Like baseball was around. And so you can have these guys who are on baseballreference.com who were born around the time of the Civil War, before the Civil War, even the late 1840s. And so in this particular episode that has Doc as the umpire, he's all passionate about baseball. And he doesn't know that there have been these changes that he's not up to speed on where the game is at, the way it's played by the hip youngsters out east. And so it's like nine balls to take your walk to first base, and someone says at some point, like, they're talking of bringing it down to eight, and it's like, wow, that's radical.
Well, and that you could also tell the pitcher where you would like him to throw it.
If you wanted a high ball, a medium ball, or a low ball. So, like, Carlton Fisk was a good low ball hitter, and he would be like, Nolan Ryan, deliver the ball low, please. talk about, like, how long the game takes now. Imagine, but it's crisp, like all of their, of course, there's other stuff that happens in this episode. It's not just the homage to baseball. The normal Gunsmoke stuff happens where Marshall Dillon is going to shoot some people.
Oh, yeah. And concerned about the unsavory element that went with baseball at the time, gamblers, hoodlums, and drunks. And you know, that's just among the players, not to mention those nasty fanatics, as they called them.
Right, and someone gives the definition at one point in the show that the word fan is used pejoratively, and someone's like, fan is short for fanatic. And it's funny, it sort of like knits up the eras now and this from the 1950s, and then baseball from the 1800s. But the local nine of Dodge is taking on a traveling all-star team. But the All-Stars are playing tight in the field, and that's because their guns trained on them, because all these people have made bets. Like, I mean, betting in baseball didn't start with the Black Sox or with Pete Rose. There was all sorts of dodginess that was going on, much more so, in fact, before the likes of Rose and Shoeless Joe. And I like after Marshall Dillon, he shoots the bad elements, gets rid of them. It's like, let's play for real before the sun goes down. There's plenty of time. And they just all merrily tromp off to the field to have a proper game where the All-Stars paced the very overconfident local group from Dodge. I don't know why. Like everyone in Dodge, it seems like they break sod and they don't really grow that much because it's a hard reality out there on the prairie. They drink at the Long Branch. And they indulge in gunplay, and they don't really do much else. So I don't know why they thought that they were like probably going to beat these All-Stars, but there it was.
Well, yeah, and it would have been a wise bet to take the over. I believe the final score was 116-12.
Yes, up in the triple digits. And the thing that's funny about the score is, like, you wonder how the guys from Dodge were able to, like, approach double digits or get into double digits themselves. But more serious note, you really do get a sense that it hasn't been around for a long time. Not so much with the 19th century, but this was the 1950s. And obviously, people in the 1950s, they would have loved this because they love baseball. And you see those photos of, like, people in a bar, and it's just so jam-packed watching the Yankees and the Dodgers in the World Series. And baseball really was what football now is. And this is more kind of like a baseball Valentine for the people of the 1950s, really, than like an overt history lesson. I mean, it functions as a history lesson, especially now at this remove. But it would have pleased people back then. It would have, like, tickled their fancy to think, like, that's the game we love so much, and who do you think is going to be in the series this year to face the Yankees? And that's really a far cry from where baseball's at right now.
The episodes are so well produced and well acted, but also what's great about them is hearing some of those period commercials. And I enjoyed the commercial for the brand new, you know, this is 1950s, the brand new stereophonic sound systems.
One of the rare commercials that's not about cigarettes. I was listening to one. This is what I go to bed with at night lately. I wake up and it's like a merry choir singing about various cigarette brands, and it's pretty funny how they're rocking away there. But it's there. You'll hear another episodes for these watches where people were asked to volunteer to watch the skies, and you could be like 80 or you could be 16. You just had to care about your country, and you would gather. I mean, really could, like, write a great short story with that as kind of like the basis. But they were putting the call out during these commercials. And if we lived near each other, you and I would go out and we'd climb up on a roof and we'd be, it's like a neighborhood watch, but you're watching the sky for enemies. It wasn't for aliens. It was like the Cold War type of stuff. So you really do get like all of that period stuff. And I will say with Gunsmoke, more than any old-time radio show, if you close your eyes, you will be in Dodge. And you can even follow the movements of people, like in the bar. Like Marshall Dillon will say, I'll get up. And he walks, and like they must have counted out the steps. So you really have a sense for how far he's gone, and then he walks back, and it's the same amount of steps. And you're in that particular saloon, albeit with your eyes closed. But the sound effects, they're that well done.
We're talking with Colin Fleming on Downtown. While we're on the subject of baseball, Major League Baseball has announced some rules changes for next year. What are your thoughts on these?
I think it's big for baseball. I haven't had time to look into the specifics, but I know about the shift. I don't know, like, to what extent it's being outlawed.
I do. What they're saying is that when the pitch is thrown, there have to be two infielders on either side of second base, and all four infielders have to have their feet on the dirt when the pitch is released.
Well, I think that's a good way to do it, really. Just and you can shade however you want on your side of that second base bag.
Right.
I know Terry Francona said, I was a little surprised that he made this remark, because I don't think he's like some dyed-in-the-wool, like, traditionalist. I think he's a pretty, like, adaptable guy, but he was saying, just go hit the other way. I don't know how feasible it is to hit the other way just by choice if someone's throwing 97 miles per hour in on your hands. You know what I mean?
So, right. It's a different game than it was. Even back in Ted Williams' time, everybody out of the bullpen is throwing 99. And to think I can just choke up and go the other way, I think you're overestimating the ability of some of these guys.
Well, the thing for me isn't even so much going the other way. I think what this rule will bring back is the hit up the middle, which doesn't exist anymore. Like, if you're watching a game on TV, it's always like that same camera angle. It's been that same camera angle like forever, like the main camera angle when you're watching the game. Someone rockets one past the pitcher, like you have that little surge in your heart, like, oh, it's a hit for our side. But it's right to some guy who doesn't even move now. He's just standing there. And he does not like some Ozzie Smith like ranging play, and he dives and pops back up. It's just some guy who happened to be in that position. And I just think this isn't baseball. When you hit it past the pitcher, like through the box like that, and it's a rocket, it should be a single. I mean, that's like the classic single, and the classic single doesn't exist anymore.
No, and it's the same way too. When you see a guy hit one in what would normally be between first and second, and it's a one hopper in the outfield, but you see some guy playing shallow right field, basically, who's an infielder who picks it up and throws him out at first base. And to me, that ought to be a hit.
So offense should go up, and especially with the other, coupled with the other big change too, the notable change with pitchers in the pitch clock. The reason pitchers don't want to be sped up is because it's like the same thing when I do push-ups. Your arm comes back. You throw harder. They're not going to be throwing as hard. So you're going to see guys like, I was looking at this, it surprised me last night that Aaron Judge, no one's really talking about because the home run numbers are what they are and the RBI totals as well, but he has a shot at the batting title. He has a shot at the Triple Crown, therefore. And you wouldn't think, like, really has a shot at the batting title because he's hitting whatever it is, 308. And last I checked, Xander Bogaerts was leading. And what was he, like 315?
I think so. Something like that, yeah.
That's pretty ridgeable. So if, like, he gets hot and Bogaerts hits a little down streak, you can win that batting title this year with 311 or 312. And I don't know. I'm not really into that. I'm not saying it has to be like 1930, where if you hit like 356, you're finishing 10th in the league. But someone should be hitting like 330, 340. 345, like that type of thing. And it just doesn't exist anymore. And I'm sorry, I think batting average is cool. I think hitters, for all of the war stuff, care about batting average to some degree, some of them. And I don't know, it's just when you take away hits and guys are just walking around the mound. I was watching a 1986 Game 7 ALCS. It was a really jumping Fenway. It was the most hopping I'd ever heard Fenway. Even like more so than the 2004-2003 era. But there's just a different, it wasn't a close game, but there's just a totally different pace to the game. It's a much more sped up pace to the game. There's a rhythm to baseball, a Christmas to baseball, and that doesn't exist right now. It's just guys like jacking it and pitchers rearing back, and your heart, you should be out of breath as a pitcher, is what I feel. It's sort of like a cardio thing. And it's like a leisurely stroll around the mound now. It's just, it's a far cry from like what Doc of Gunsmoke would have appreciated.
Yeah, and it seems to have worked in the minor leagues. I think the average time of games this year was reduced almost 30 minutes. I love that. And they're also telling batters, you've got to get in the batter's box. Can't be hanging around adjusting all of your body armor. You need to get back in there and get ready to go.
It makes people think faster, too. You can't regather. You have to think on the fly. I know it's not hockey. It's not like guys, Connor McDavid, blazing up and down like the ice. But you do have to think more in the moment now. And it puts an emphasis on that athleticism. There is an athleticism in baseball. It's not just like Greg Luzinski. It's maybe like a quiet athleticism between like pitcher and hitter when you have to like get in there and do your thing and react quickly and think quickly and remember quickly. What did this guy throw me before? You can't take as many deep breaths. It's just a different pace. And players say that they don't want to do this. And can we go and introduce these things slowly? No. You know what? When you introduce things and you have no choice, people adapt. That's just the reality with whatever it is. And I was surprised. And you mentioned a half hour in the minor leagues. I had seen those figures too. And I thought, they're not shaving 2 minutes off the game. I mean, this is big. Mm. 2.5 hours is where you want a frequent sports event to be. It's different with football because it's once a week. So, okay, that can go over 3 hours. But if you're being asked to return repeatedly, 80 times a year or 160 times a year. I mean, no one's there for all 162, but like 2.5 hours. It's just like a good, like a basketball game. It's like you know what you're in for, and there it is, and it's done, and you move on.
And I don't know if any of these rule changes will lead to this, but I would love to see speed become a factor again in the game because that's virtually vanished here in the last decade.
Well, the analytics all say that speed is irrelevant and the stolen base and everything. But I mentioned I was watching that 1986 ALCS and Marty Barrett, second baseman for the Red Sox. And if you look at like his OPS plus and you look at his WAR, his OPS plus, he's like a below average offensive player. I don't know. I watch him play and I think this guy contributes to wins. And I think someone like Mike Trout, it's like probably a bad time to say this, because he has that home run streak going and he has those flashes, but come the end of the season, Mike Trout's going to have 40 home runs. His RBI total is going to be in the 70s. I mean, I don't know. And he's going to hit 280. Like, I don't know. Does that like blow your mind? Like, that's really weird. 40 home runs and 73 RBI, which is what he's going to have. And he walks a lot. So like really his WAR is because Mike Trout's greatness is fundamentally because he walks so much. If he walked an average amount, got more hits, even he wouldn't have that gaudy WAR. So, like, I don't know. What's he do? Like, is he help? There is value in some of the old stats, and there are also value in those things. Our eyes, what they tell us. There are ways to contribute, to psychologically contribute to a game, to be on the bases and just be messing with the pitcher's head, distract him. Next guy pops one off the wall for a double. I mean, those are just the core of baseball, that kind of stuff to me. And it's just so not very watchable. And there are all these exciting things happen. You have someone who's going to hit, he's going to go past Roger Maris. That's going to happen. I mean, is that the real home run single season? You have two Triple Crown contenders. You have the Dodgers, who are just like this amazing franchise over the last however many years, averaging all these wins, and now they're even doing better than they usually do. I mean, it's like 50-something games over 500, but it's just so like boring when you get away from like that kind of thing and you actually put the game on and you watch it.
I agree with you. Colin Fleming here on Damptown. Let's talk music and go back to 1966 and a terrific early recording from the Yardbirds. It was not a big hit here in the States, top 30, I think, but a terrific recording called 10 Years Happenings 10 Years Time Ago that I guess was the first pairing of Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page.
On dual lead guitar. So Page had come into the band and supposed to play bass, and there are a couple songs, This and Stroll On, which was a rewrite of The Train Kept a Rolling, where it's both of them. Although it's really mostly Beck, because the way it worked was, if you were already in a band, someone wasn't going to come in and like poach your stuff. Jimmy Page has said, like, for instance, with Stroll On, he's not on there at all. Happenings 10 Years Time Ago is one of those singles that you could say is among the finest 45s ever released, but no one has ever really known what it is. And when I first heard it as a teenager, it just was one of those pieces of music that blew my mind. And so I've always loved the Yardbirds. They're one of my five or six favorite bands. And I like that they have all of these different groups, sounds within the overall legacy of the band. Like in 63, they're like these bluesy rhythm and blues type of guys. And they get a little poppier in 64, 65, out goes Clapton, in comes Jeff Beck. And he's just like radically innovating on the guitar, and they're doing Gregorian chants and just so much madness. And in 1966, they have this song and they have a self-titled album. It's one of the best rock and roll LPs. And then Beck leaves, Jimmy Page takes over. In 1966 and 67, within the live arena, they're like this psychedelic, heavy metal, classical, rhythm and blues. Really, no one is like them. They were innovating so much in a different way with Page. So this is a mind blower of a song. If listeners haven't heard it, I would recommend that you check it out, because it's immediately going to be the type of thing that makes you say, how have I never heard this? And it's one of the best things I've ever heard, with this freak out section in the middle with Jeff Beck playing guitar. And so, like, he does this kind of, like, voiceover, too. That's him speaking in that kind of, like, COD BBC voice. But the guitar solo, he uncorks. He plays at the end of it these very fast high notes. It's just some of the best guitar playing you'll ever hear.
Yeah, it's great. Another great recording, too. I would say got to be among the best live recordings, authorized or otherwise, of Bob Dylan from Atlanta, 2002.
Yeah, it's a soundboard. So I was listening to that, and you really can't have a live recording, official or otherwise, that sounds too much better than that. And it's hard to believe that Love and Theft came out over 20 years ago now. Mm. I remember it was September 11th and 2001. So this particular show is from a few months after that. And you hear the separation of the instruments. And I don't know, time's weird because, like, when I started getting into music in a big way, it was the early 90s. And it, like, was almost as much time between then and like Sgt. Pepper as like this Dylan show, which I think of as like a recent thing. And now it's kind of weird. I think time passes in a different way during this century because culture is more homogenized. So it's like sometimes I would go on these really long walks and I'd go past like all these different kind of terrains, like 30-mile walks out in the country. So I'd see like all these like sort of different environments and I would note the changes. But like if I walk 30 miles somewhere else and things are like pretty constant, it registers differently.
Right.
So it was like the 60s and you had like, there was so much personality in the 80s and all of that. Now everything is just kind of really, we almost evaluate the passage of time by like technology. And what horrific like political fighting people are doing here in this country. So it's an awesome show. If like Dylan put it out, it probably will at some point, you'd be like, oh my goodness, that's one of the best live albums I've ever heard. And it's very danceable in parts. And just like Duke Ellington and the Grateful Dead, like Dylan really understood dance music, which isn't how we think of him, but there's certainly some numbers in here that can, Summer Days, for instance, that'll have a guy like you doing your Charleston up there in Maine.
Wait, this is a lot of new stuff, new at the time, but a great selection of old songs, a great version of My Back Pages. And the recording really showcases the other musicians with him as well, and the harmonies.
Definitely. He's one of those guys who, like, just always has a great band. And you think, well, I mean, who wouldn't if you were Dylan? But no, it's like picking the roster for the NFL team. It's like the draft, the talent and everything. And he always had these phenomenal musicians. I mean, going back to the actual band, the Hawks in the 1960s, to help him realize his vision. I was listening to Love and Theft the other day, and I was just like, wow, this really is up there with the other things that he's done. Sometimes people just want that to be the case, and you're going to see the 5-star reviews and everything, and that doesn't age well. But I would say anything that you might have wanted to say about that record 20 years ago, 20-plus years ago, it seems almost prophetic now.
And I've seen Dylan a number of times through the years, and including in that time period, that phase of the tour. He seemed to be having, I think, more fun than usual as well. He was pretty engaging during the appearance I saw.
Well, you have the band, and you have the material, and you're making the art that you want to be making, and it's getting out there, and you're able to do what you wish to do behind it in terms of promoting it and performing it. He's more than really anyone I think of, more than McCartney. I think Dylan has a need to be a road musician. I think it's a big part of his identity. I think McCartney's a natural showman, but it's something that you couldn't take away from Dylan. I mean, he's just always doing it, it seems like, and has been for a long time. I almost think of it again. I don't know why I think of it this way, but like a coach in football who just has to be doing it, has to be providing hands-on instruction and evolving and thinking about the game in new ways, but also having all of these lessons to draw on. He's just the classic road musician. I think it's a part of who he is.
All right, finally, you're back at the Monument doing your thing. How is that going?
Well, I was doing push-ups the other day, in this park by the water, and I heard this rumor that the monument was open again. So it had been closed for 2.5 years, and it closed. COVID had actually started, and the official word hadn't come to shut down the monument, but no one was going. The park rangers clearly didn't want to be there, and it's just me. And I knew, like, it was going to be closed for, I didn't know it was going to be closed for that long, obviously. But I knew it would be a while before I was in there, so I was just, like, trying to get the last few, like, workouts that I could. So when I got this news, Kimball, I was like a redcoat dancing on Trailstone. Like, I was like a man possessed coming down the road and saying I didn't want to let myself down and everything. So I get into the monument, and I'm like going up the first 10 stairs. Right away, I'm noticing a difference. this is not the seamless transition I was hoping for. I did 3,000 stairs at the City Hall today at Government Center, because the monument's only open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday because of the dearth of park rangers. There's only ever one there, but whatever. And so I've just sort of been in the abeyance. I've been trying to, like, do what I can. And I thought that was pretty good. But, like, I noticed right away the monument is one tough mistress, as I put it. So I was able to do it 4 circuits. But I was hurting. I was disgusted with myself. And then I went back the next day and I did 5 circuits, which is, like, pretty normal. So I'm getting back to it. But it is the ultimate. It's the depth of the stairs. That's what it is. It makes, like, all the difference. But it's just the ultimate workout, that monument. I bow down and I respect it a lot.
I also saw the picture you posted of the sludge you described. That it appears you're secreting Elmer's glue in your workouts.
Yeah, great. Oof. So I come out of the monument on Saturday afternoon the 4 times, and I look down at my leg, and I have this telltale. So when I work out really hard, I don't have, like, a proper explanation for this. It's like, I don't know. It's some weird admixture that comes out of these shorts. And it's just, you wash them. It doesn't matter. Like, it lives in there, and it like, reseeds itself. I don't know what happens. And I'm like, oh, it's a gray sludge. And so I documented it, and I put that photo up on Instagram for, like, my 4 followers. But when you see that sludge, it's worrisome in a way. And it's like the color of, like, silt. I don't know what's going on, but
I thought you were literally burning fat. That whatever the 4% body fat that you have was just coming right out of you.
You could conduct some interesting experiments on it, I'm sure. And my mom was like, "Aren't you embarrassed? You're, like, so gross." And then I'm I'm going on, like, and I noticed it too. Once I'm in the monument, like, I just admit this, it doesn't reflect well on me. The better I perform, the more arrogant and violent I am in the monument, the less patient I am with people. But even, like, when I wasn't performing that well, I'm like, there's this guy at the top, right? And I wanted to take a photo of the 294. It's marked the stair. And, like, I'm back type of thing. And this guy's like, "Oh, hey, you're looking to come up." And he's just standing there. It's like, "What a beautiful morning." I'm thinking, get your pasty white ass out of the way. It's time for some defenestration. Wow. This is really, it's like, "Hey," he's like this kind of, like, old guy, a Sunday drive. It's like, "What a beautiful." You have to be kidding me. It's like, "Oh, kidding you about what?" I, like, push him out of the way, practically hit the top step, and I come back down. But you know what? It used to close during the winter just because of the weather. And so when I went back in there to start up again in the spring, I would just do it once because it would mess my legs up, and my wind was gone, so that I could do it 5 times already is, like, a reasonable sign. But I'm not where I need to be. And don't think, Kimball, don't bet against me in that monument getting back to where I was in short order.
Oh, there have been plenty of fools who have bet against Colin Fleming. I will not be one of them. Thank you very much.
Yeah, but it's it'll put hair on your chest. That monument, the monument is for real. Like, all the things that I've done, lesson learned, depth of stairs. There's like a life lesson in there, I feel like, but that's And a lot in life comes down to the depth of the stairs, Kimball.
Well, we wish you luck with that. Hey, by the way, if you're at the BC Maine game Saturday, let me know.
Well, especially because your team seems to have a chance now.
We're both 0-2, so somebody's got to win, right?
Well, BC got smoked by Virginia Tech the other day. Virginia Tech had already lost to a non-Division One school. I mean, I know it's like your job and everything, but for me, with it not being my job, it's like the team loses like the first game of the season that they should win. Do you know what I mean? They lose the second game. And it's like, and you have the season tickets. You know what I'm saying? It's like, really? You couldn't have given me like a little bit to look forward to, because now, like, it's done. It's just done. You're automatically playing out the string because the season's so short.
Well, we'll be there, and somebody's season will hopefully head in the right direction. We're pulling for the Black Bears, but if you're there, let me know. We'll be there late afternoon. It's a 7:30 game on Saturday.
Yeah, okay, will do.
All right, thanks, Colin. Have a good week.
All right, see you there.
It's Colin Fleming every Tuesday on Downtown. Visit his website, colinflemminglit.com. Subscribe to the Many Moments More blog.